FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's June 25th, 2018. So, lots going on in the country. We've got faux outrage breaking out all over the place over border incidents, border crossings, immigrant crime waves, etc. Well, fact is, the U.S. was founded on the concept of cheap labor. Perhaps now that's one of the motivations for burying the hatchet, so to speak, with North Korea. Well, we'll talk about that. We're going to answer some of your questions. If you have more questions, just shoot them over to us. Email address is kl@kerrylutz.com. Right now, John Rubino is back with us. Happy Monday, John.
Hey, Kerry.
Hey, so we got an email from Tom. Basically, he's taking the red pill. His wife is still popping blue pills, and she's fully invested in her pension, her 401k, et cetera. And he's tried to talk her out of it, but it's her choice. He says she's blue pill all the way. Ask John if anything is wrong with no intention of retiring and loading up on medals just to help out at the end of our life cycle. Love you, bud, Tom. So what do you think of that?
Well, there are two questions there. And the first is, I guess, how safe are 401ks and pensions? Mm-hmm. And a lot of pensions are not safe. And I think most people get that now, that there's a budding pension crisis out there. So that especially a lot of public sector workers who think they're going to get a nice, generous pension at the end of their working lives are going to be disappointed because the money's not there. So if you have a public sector pension, you need to look into the finances of that pension plan. If you're in, for instance, Chicago, you're screwed. You are not going to see most of what they promised you. But there are other places where pensions are relatively solid. So you basically have to figure out where you are on the spectrum of funding for your pension plan. Now, 401ks and IRAs are a different and interesting problem going forward, because what happens when governments start to panic? In other words, they run out of money, they start scrounging around for more money, however they can get it. And one of the things they tend to do is look for untaxed parts of the economy. And right now, the IRAs and the 401ks that are out there represent this multi-trillion-dollar honeypot for governments. So it won't be a surprise when things get really crazy if governments start interfering with IRAs and 401ks in ways that are detrimental to the owners of those accounts. In other words, they impose wealth taxes on them or insist that they shift from stocks to government bonds as a way to help the government finance its deficits, or just expropriate some of what's in big 401k and IRA accounts because everybody else has these needs and you have all this money, it's going to be something like that. And that's not a guarantee, but it's possible. So if you have all your money in accounts that are being run by entities that you don't control, then you run the risk that governments will start taxing your wealth or expropriating it. And the way you deal with that is to diversify. Don't shut down your 401k or your IRA, but have some precious metals, for instance, that you store outside of the banking system that's harder to expropriate. Have some foreign real estate that the IRS can't just immediately get at. And in that way, you guarantee that, or you increase the odds that some of what you've got is going to survive the coming period of extremely crazy government behavior.
And we saw Obama actually take steps to do that with that MIRA thing, which he put John Corzine in charge of running. I don't know if he actually did that or not, but supposedly he was going to. And who better to run a shell game and a scam than the likes of John Corzine. I mean, he's the master shell game guy. In fact, I saw somebody when I was in Manhattan over the weekend doing the three card Monte, and I swear he looked just like John Corzine.
Well, that's a nice retirement career for that guy, you know.
Yeah.
Small scale fraud after a lifetime of large scale fraud. But okay, we had a second question from your listener.
Yeah.
Besides four ones.
Yeah, I've got. They thought we were rather hard on ETFs, particularly GLD and I guess SLV, which is really just two heads of the same coin, and we weren't fair to them. But,
no, Kerry, there was another one, though. It was about loading up on gold and silver at year at life's end or something.
Yeah, that was part of Tom's question that I read, is that should he be stocking? He doesn't plan to ever retire, but does it make sense to keep loading up with the gold and silver?
Oh, yeah. Well, in the sense that gold and silver are assets that will probably do well in a currency crisis scenario. In other words, when we start really screwing up the fiat currencies of the world, gold and silver will go up relative to them. So it's a good investment, regardless of what your future plans are. If you intend to retire, it's a good thing to own. And if you don't intend to retire, it's still probably a good thing to put money into, just because precious metals are at the stage in this credit bubble process where they will do relatively well compared to most financial assets.
Yeah.
So the question about GLD and other kinds of ETFs is a complicated one, because ETFs are complicated. There's a million different variations on that theme. So you can't say anything general about the space, but you can say specific things about specific ETFs. And GLD is one that the guys at GATA, including James Turk, the co-author of mine on a couple of books, have looked into the governance policies of GLD and concluded that it doesn't necessarily have to have the gold that it says it holds.
Correct.
So in a crisis, you could end up with something that you think is a gold investment like GLD that turns out not really to be that it only has half as much gold or no gold at all. And so you've got a piece of paper rather than actual physical metal, which isn't what you want in the coming financial crisis. You want real stuff that doesn't come with a counterparty risk, where, in other words, that someone has to do something and keep a promise in order for that thing to have value. See, gold and silver in your hand don't carry counterparty risk. They are what they are. You own them. Nobody else has to keep a promise. But something like GLD, somebody has to keep a promise. The guys running that ETF have to have the gold in the vault that they promised you. And according to their governance policies, maybe they don't have to. They don't actually have it, you know. So that's the thing you need to worry about with an ETF like GLD. Now, GDX and GDXJ, which own shares of gold miners, assuming that there isn't some landmine in their governance procedures, actually have the stocks. So that's less risky in terms of counterparty risk. You know, you've got a portfolio of equities there, and the net asset value of the portfolio is what they say it is, if their accountants are doing a good job. So you have exposure in that way to equities. Now, that's probably a less risky proposition in terms of counterparty risk than something like GLD, where they claim to have gold in a vault, but maybe not. So and then you get into all kinds of other ETFs, like the highly leveraged ones, which are strictly trading vehicles. You know, if you've got that one that goes up three times the price of gold and the one that goes down three times the price of gold, that's not actually gold. That's futures contracts. And so you don't think of that as a gold investment in either direction, long or short. What that is a trading vehicle. You get into it, you see if it works out in the next couple of weeks, and then you get out of it. So ETFs are a big subject that require a lot of thought. in terms of choosing the right one that, that meets your needs. But there are definitely good ones and bad ones in the space. So you really need to study it before you get in.
Absolutely. Hey, here's a YouTube member of the FSN community. Why is JPM, as in JP Morgan, going long with 100 million ounces of physical silver? Are they going to reset the value?
That's the big question in the precious metal space right now. Why are they doing that? They've had a massive, massive short position for a long time in silver. And a lot of people in the sound money community assumed that was them manipulating the price down. But over the last few years, they've been switching and going long. They've been building up a big physical position.
A major physical position, like the biggest one in the world, right?
Yeah.
Maybe except for the Chinese.
And what's weird about this is that now a lot of people in the precious metal space are actually hoping that JP Morgan Chase is able to manipulate the precious metals markets in order to make silver go up, because it looks like that's what they want to happen now. So now we like market manipulation. Right. If JP Morgan Chase is going to do it to make silver go to $50 an ounce. So I don't know. A lot of this stuff is very opaque to me. And there's a lot of smart people on both sides of the argument about whether precious metals are manipulated or not. I tend to trust the people who say it is manipulated without myself having a lot of insider knowledge on that subject. And if JP Morgan Chase is a big manipulator in the silver's market, in the silver market, and they have indeed gone massively long silver, then we might finally get to benefit from some of the skullduggery in the precious metals market. You know, maybe we'll be friends with JP Morgan Chase for a couple of years while they make us some money. I don't know.
Wouldn't that be a switch?
It's better to have them long than short, all things considered.
Yeah. If they're going long, I mean, in theory, you don't know their full book. They could be balanced out on the short side with options and futures as well. And they just have a natural hedge at that point. But assume that big a position is probably a reason. And by the way, that was posted on FSN member Nothing to No One in Particular 4 days ago on YouTube. So, hey, so getting on with things, John, what have we got for today?
Well, we've got the FANG stocks tanking. Have you seen that? The Dow is down about 400 points, which is 1.66%, which is a lot. But the NASDAQ, which contains mostly tech stocks, is down 2.6%. And that's a gigantic move for a stock index. It's a pretty good size move for a stock. But for an index, it's immense. And, you know, you look at the big powerhouse tech stocks, Amazon is down 58 points today.
Yeah.
Google is down 37 points. Netflix is down 27 points. These are big drops. But, of course, they've had big pops in the past couple of years. Netflix has gone up from the, I think, 190 range within the last year, and now it's at 383. So it's due for a drop. All of these guys are. And now that we're having a trade war with China, which is going to affect those guys possibly dramatically because they're logical targets for China to retaliate against us, people are starting to wonder if maybe you don't want to be in Netflix at 1,000 times free cash flow. You know, the numbers are crazy from a value investing standpoint with these things. So it's easy to look at them and say, man, that's overvalued now, and take your profits. That's kind of what's happening right now. People are finally starting to cash out of these things after extraordinary runs. And this doesn't say anything about the future necessarily, but if stocks start to roll over now because we have suddenly things to worry about that we didn't have before, like a trade war and spiking oil prices and spiking inflation. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be worried about financial assets. And in that kind of a scenario, the things that have gone up most tend to be the things that fall most, just because there are so many people out there with profits to protect. And that's what you're seeing right now with tech stocks. Where this goes from here is anybody's guess, but the Dow, at least, is down, what, 8 out of the last 9 sessions, and down, and today it's the biggest drop in that stretch. So suddenly the psychology of the market is starting to get pessimistic, starting to be worried. And stocks have gone up so steadily and so much over the past decade that there are air pockets under a lot of stocks. So if we're going to see a change in market psychology, the price action that results from that could be dramatic.
I thought stocks always went up, just like real estate, just like the price of your home, except for those few times when they don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, until they don't. They keep going up. And that's how credit bubbles work, is things go up until a lot of people are convinced that they always go up. Mm-hmm. Then those people buy because it doesn't matter what price you pay because they're always going to go up. And that's your final part of the greater fool theory there. It's the final set of fools coming in. We have some unusual aspects to this bubble, one of which is corporate share buybacks. They're looking at a record amount of money spent by corporations to buy back their own shares this year, which is a nice tailwind for a market. You know, if you've got companies borrowing money and then buying back stock, that's a lot of buying pressure there. And then if you've got central banks around the world buying stock at the same time that governments are, or that that companies are, you've got a lot of axes to grind out there. In other words, you've got a lot of self-interest involved on the part of people who have the power to make it happen. In other words, corporate CEOs like to see their stock go up because they're paid in part on the stock going up. So, and they have the power to borrow money through their company to buy that stock and push it up. Central banks, same thing. Once they've accumulated a big equity portfolio, it's in their interest for equities to go up. And they've got the ability to print unlimited amounts of money and use that to buy equities. So you've got some stuff going on in the market that has never gone on in this scale before. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what got us to this point, which is extreme overvaluation, no matter how you look at it. So frequently in bubbles, the thing that gets you there is also the thing that people think will keep it going on forever, but it doesn't work that way. You blow up the bubble, and then at some point it bursts, regardless of what anybody else is doing to support it. So maybe this is it. We'll see. This is what the early stage of a bubble bursting would feel like, but we don't know that this is going to be the bursting of this bubble until after the fact when it bursts. And then we say, oh yeah, there's where it started in June. So maybe this is it, but it's fun to watch regardless.
Well, the market has not gone up this year.
It's down for the year.
So the first time in a long time where that's happened, right?
Yeah, the markets have been down for the year at various times in the last 10 years, but not, I don't think, in June.
Yeah.
Usually that's a January thing or a February thing where you get a drop and, in the first 2 months of the year, we're down. But now it's heading for the first 7 months of the year and we're down. Mm. So that is different. Something that hasn't happened in this bull run.
Yeah, and we could see more. I mean, rates are still going up, right?
Well, the Fed is still intending to raise interest rates. Mm. And long-term rates spiked, the 30-year and the 10-year treasury. But they're coming off a bit. So it's possible that the markets are starting to worry and flight capital is pouring back into treasuries now, which are lowering treasury rates. But if the Fed keeps raising rates and treasury rates fall, then we got an inverted yield curve, which is a very reliable recession indicator. So there's a lot of stuff going on out there that bears watching. But remember, at some point, the Fed is going to reverse course. And if the stock market drops more than makes them comfortable. In other words, if we have, say, a 10% drop in the stock market, you'll see the Fed at first start promising not to raise any more interest rates. And then if the stock market keeps dropping, they will actively start cutting interest rates again. So somewhere out there is a renewal of Fed easing. And that will be interesting because we're programmed to follow the Fed and do what the Fed wants us to do. When they're easing, traders buy stocks. So we'll see if that happens again or if that's the end of the road when people recognize that the Fed has no more power to affect markets because it's used up all its ammo in the past 30 years. And then all hell breaks loose. So one of these days, that's going to happen. If it's going to happen imminently with the current downturn in the stock market, who knows? That would be interesting to watch. I'm assuming that at some point it stops working for them. So maybe this is the time.
This could be it. You never know. That's for certain. We've seen this happen before. Thought it's the beginning of the end, and it turned out to be the end of the beginning. Well, the more, you know, markets don't just go straight up. Look, it was only December when November last year, Bitcoin was roaring off to new heights and everyone was making all these highfalutin predictions. It was supposed to be at $100,000 by now, John. And, you know, it's picked up a little bit in the past couple of days. Haven't looked at the price. You know, that's the key, where you know the bubbles pop when people lose interest. And many of you have lost interest in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, but they will be back. Right now, $6,319 per Bitcoin. That's still a remarkable advance. But the fact that it can't get up to the $10,000 range, even the $8,000 range, is indication it's going to fall more. You know, the trend is not your friend here, unless you're trading those Bitcoin futures, John. You know, when you look at the chart, it's lower highs and lower lows. And what does that mean?
Well, it is interesting that Bitcoin started its current downturn just about when futures trading started.
Mm-hmm.
So I suspect what happened was that a lot of newbies and novice traders got involved in a market that also had sharks. And those sharks just ate the inexperienced Bitcoin traders up by forcing the price down and knocking people out of their positions. And then, you know, maybe at some point they're going to start buying in and then force the price up against all the new short sellers that have come in expecting Bitcoin to fall forever. You know, that's how futures trading works a lot of the time. You get some experienced, powerful players in the market who just take advantage of the people who are not experienced and powerful on both sides. So it could easily be that at some point the traders decide it's in their interest for Bitcoin to go back up and then it rockets again. We just can't know. This is a new market. But one interesting aspect of this, though, is that a lot of the money that went into Bitcoin and other cryptos, at least a lot of people believe, would have otherwise gone into gold and silver. And that's one of the explanations for gold and silver not doing so well in the last few years, even though there are a lot of macro conditions that would point towards higher gold and silver prices. Well, now that Bitcoin is way down, is that a good thing for gold and silver? Is money going to start pouring out of cryptos and into what are now perceived as very safe forms of capital, like gold and silver, you know, things that will protect your purchasing power over the next 30 years, guaranteed? You know, that's something you can just about say with certainty about gold and silver, since they've done it for 3,000 years.
Hey, well, I just want to point out, I wrote this article about Bitcoin busting on December 17th of last year. The peak price was December 16th. So when I was actually writing the article on the 16th, didn't release it till the 17th, saying, like, we all know Bitcoin's going to infinity, just like gold and silver back in 2011. So now is a great time to sell half of your holdings, because half of infinity is better than a loss. And not to toot my own horn, but to the day, it was just so obvious, the parabolic rise and a parabolum. It also goes down. The flip side is the other side, it goes down. This chart is extremely, extremely bearish. Three bottoms, you know, I don't know if you can apply your Elliott wave theory to it or not, but it's still going lower, probably below 6,000. My guess was I called a low of about 4,800, hasn't hit there yet. When it hits 4,800, probably going to be a good time to buy.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really have a sense of how you trade Bitcoin, but that's quite
very
a drop.
Carefully. I mean,
when something is down by 2/3 or 3/4, you must be getting into a buy range, right?
Yeah, 5,000 is that buy range.
Yeah. You know what? One of the things that does worry me about cryptos is that they are basically pieces of technology, and a new piece of technology can come along that does better than the old piece at whatever it is you're trying to do with it. and just pushes the old piece off the field. You know, if Bitcoin is perceived to be obsolete for some reason because something better comes along, then its downside is zero, right? It has no intrinsic value. I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying that that in the world of technology is something that happens. And this is technology. It's not a physical thing that you can hold in your hand. So people should be careful when trading something that that does have a potential price of zero.
Yeah, well, like you said, no intrinsic value. Theoretically, you know, gold could go down to zero, let's face it, but unlikely that that's going to occur, but it is possible. So let's not, let's just stay aware. But I believe there's going to be many more booms in Bitcoin to come because you're going to be running out of options. At some point in the future, you run out of options and you'll wind up in cryptos yet again. There's no other way. Hey, so anyway, make sure you check out John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Subscribe to both our newsletters, Financial Survival Network and Dollar Collapse. And questions, be a part of the show like others in the community. Email address is kl@carrylutz.com. The Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. John, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Gary. See ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.